Why do we keep falling for the same energy fantasies? Every generation seems convinced that some revolutionary technology, electric cars, nuclear power too cheap to meter, backyard solar panels, will transform civilization within a decade. Yet here we are, still burning fossil fuels much as we did 50 years ago. This pattern of hype and disappointment isn't just frustrating, it's dangerous. When we chase mirages, we miss opportunities for genuine progress. Energy transitions happen slowly, constrained by physics, economics, and the sheer scale of our infrastructure. Understanding why our predictions fail so spectacularly reveals more than technical limitations. It exposes how wishful thinking, political pressure, and ideological fervor repeatedly cloud our judgment about civilization's most fundamental need. The summer of 2018 brought record oil prices and ambitious proposals. Al Gore called for 100% renewable electricity within just 10 years, claiming the goal was achievable, affordable, and transformative. These proposals share a fatal flaw with previous failed forecasts. They ignore the inherently slow pace of energy transitions and the massive infrastructure investments that took more than a century to build. Electric vehicles have been just around the corner for over a century. In the 1890s, they outnumbered gasoline cars, quieter, cleaner, and safer. Thomas Edison spent a decade perfecting his nickel-iron battery, dismissing Ford's gasoline engines as not really useful. Yet by the 1930s, electric cars had vanished, defeated by assembly lines, electric starters, and cheap gas. The 1973 oil crisis sparked renewed enthusiasm. California's 1990 mandate, requiring 10% electric vehicles by 2003, was quietly abandoned. Converting America's fleet would require 25% more electricity, historically a 15-year undertaking. Electric vehicles offer no carbon advantage on coal-heavy grids. Too cheap to meter became nuclear power's albatross. Political factors, demonstrating peaceful nuclear applications, drove rapid deployment of submarine reactor designs for civilian use. The 1973 oil crisis paradoxically damaged nuclear's prospects. Conservation slashed electricity demand growth from 7% annually to 2-3%. Safety regulations exploded from 100 codes to over 1,600, tripling construction times. Costs skyrocketed. California's Diablo Canyon jumped from $450 million to $4.4 billion. Nuclear received 96% of U.S. energy research funding between 1947 to 1998, roughly $145 billion. Yet no country has solved waste disposal, requiring millennia of isolation. A successful failure, commercialized rapidly, yet falling dramatically short of expectations. In 1976, Amory Lovins proposed decentralized renewable energy matched to local needs, eliminating nuclear risks while spreading democracy. His soft energy path promised to be elegant, benefit the poor, and prove ecologically inoffensive. By 2000, renewable energy, excluding large hydropower, provided just 4% of U.S. primary energy, 90% from industrial-scale operations like logging residue and commercial wind farms. True small-scale, decentralized energy contributed less than 0.5%, missing Lovins' target by 98.5%. When soft energy faded, Lovins pivoted to the hypercar, promising 200 mpg efficiency. Despite launching Hypercar Inc. in 1999, no vehicle materialized. Peak oil theorists predict industrial civilization's collapse by 2025, resting on false premises, like claiming global per capita energy consumption peaked in 1978, when it was actually 10% higher in 2008. Mel King Hubbard correctly predicted the 1970 U.S. oil peak, but estimated 18% too low. His global forecasts proved worse, predicting peaks in 1990 or 2000 that never materialized. The latest U.S. Geological Survey assessment puts global ultimate oil recovery at 3 trillion barrels. Beyond conventional oil lie 4 to 5 trillion barrels of heavy oils. Venezuela holds over 1.2 trillion barrels. Alberta's oil sands contain 2.5 trillion barrels of bitumen. With global CO2 emissions rising, China surpassed the U.S. as top emitter in 2006, with emissions 2.15 times higher than 1990, carbon sequestration has become a focal point for stabilization efforts. Earth's biosphere already moves over 120 billion tons of carbon annually from atmosphere to plants through photosynthesis. Can we enhance this natural process or engineer new solutions? Tree plantations face fundamental limitations. Fast-growing species mature in 10 to 15 years, after which they provide negligible additional storage. Sequestering just 10% of 2005's emissions would require boreal plantings nearly equal to the combined forest area of North America and Russia. Soils store more carbon than the atmosphere, but rising ozone reduces plant productivity, warming accelerates decomposition, and many European trees show reduced sequestration at higher CO2 levels. Biochar can hold 2 to 2.5 times more carbon for potentially 1,000 years, yet the same crop residues are needed to prevent erosion and for ethanol production. Technical solutions face greater challenges. Mineral carbonation requires at least 3 tons of ore per ton of CO2 sequestered. Controlling just coal emissions would require mining over 33 billion tons annually, nearly 3 times the mass of all fossil fuels extracted. Carbon capture from power plants would require handling volumes 1.3 to 2.2 times the entire global oil industry at costs approaching $300 billion annually to sequester just 15% of emissions. These numbers reveal why carbon sequestration can't serve as a magic bullet, only a supporting role in climate mitigation. Liquid biofuels aren't new. Henry Ford's Model T ran on ethanol or gasoline. While Brazil successfully implemented sugarcane ethanol in 1975, U.S. corn ethanol remained marginal until recent acceleration. The fundamental problem is scale. Replacing global transportation fuels would require more land than currently cultivated in all tropical regions. Even Brazilian sugarcane's high efficiency would demand 600 million hectares, nearly 40% of the world's cultivated area. Converting America's entire corn harvest would yield just 13% of gasoline consumption. Yet powerful agribusiness lobbies secured subsidies worth $5.5 to $7.3 billion annually by 2006. Environmental impacts compound the problem. Corn cultivation causes massive soil loss, requires heavy nitrogen fertilizer, creating Gulf dead zones, depletes aquifers, and increases greenhouse gas emissions through nitrous oxide releases. Cellulosic ethanol, fermented from cellulose, is promoted as solving food versus fuel concerns. Despite significant investment and Silicon Valley entrepreneurs claiming cost competitiveness by 2009, reality falls short. Crop residues aren't valueless waste. They return nutrients, retain moisture, and prevent erosion. Only 40% of America's corn stover could be sustainably removed, equivalent to just 3% of gasoline consumption. The biofuel story illustrates how political pressure, agricultural lobbying, and wishful thinking drive massive investments into solutions that don't scale. The math never worked, but powerful interests and appealing narratives overwhelmed rational analysis. Historical data reveals sobering timelines for energy transitions. The U.S. shifted from biomass to coal in the 1880s, globally in the late 1890s, Russia in the late 1920s, and China in the 1960s. Coal's global dominance fell from 95% in 1900 to 60% by 1950, surpassed by oil only in 1965. Oil took 50 years from its 1860s introduction to capture 10% of global energy, then another 30 years to reach 25%. Natural gas required 70 years to rise from 1% to 20%. The global oil industry now handles 30 billion barrels annually through infrastructure worth over $5 trillion built across a century. Gore's claim that renewable energy costs will fall like computer chips misunderstands technological progress. Moore's law works through denser transistor packing, not cheaper silicon. Wind power faces severe constraints. Extraordinarily low power density means supplying half of today's electricity would require 2 to 4 million square kilometers of wind farms, areas comparable to Mexico. Technical realities impose clear limits. Globally, 15% wind power by 2030-2040 is aspirational, 30% unrealistic, and 50% impossible. Infrastructure requirements, capital investments, and supply chain development impose constraints that enthusiasm cannot overcome. Energy transitions are measured in generations, not election cycles. Energy myths promise quick fixes. Electric vehicles saving us in a decade, nuclear power too cheap to meter, renewables democratizing energy, carbon sequestration enabling guilt-free fossil fuel use. These share common failures: ignoring infrastructure constraints, underestimating scale requirements, overestimating technological improvement rates, and mistaking ideology for practicality. The crucial lesson: avoiding environmental impacts beats neutralizing them afterward. Affluent nations could moderate energy use to intensify decarbonization. Modernizing countries could achieve economic gains without replicating Western waste. What we need isn't revolutionary promises, but evolutionary progress. Energy transitions take decades, constrained by massive infrastructure investments. To avoid future myths, distrust claims about rapid adoption. Recognize the persistence of established technologies. Don't embrace unproven energies for ideological reasons. And remember, energy systems improve gradually, not exponentially. As Terence observed over 21 centuries ago, men believe what they want to. Hardly the best foundation for rational policy. The path forward requires accepting uncomfortable truths. No quick fixes, no revolutionary breakthroughs, no painless technologies. Progress will be gradual, requiring sustained effort across generations. The question isn't whether we'll transition away from fossil fuels, we will, but whether we'll do so thoughtfully or waste decades chasing mirages.